Thanks for joining the podcast with Tamara Gondor. Conversations with everyday innovators that reject status quo, think differently, and make a positive difference in their world. Listen in so you can ignite innovation, influence others, and make an impact too. And now your host, CrossFit addict, knee-high sock lover, and according to her kids, average cook, Tamara Gondor.
Have you ever wondered why some product launches seem to move forward just flawlessly and others die on the vine? Well, our guest today, Felicia Anderson, has some insights on this. She is leading the effort of a company-wide product management council at Pitney Bowes. Now, for those of you who don't know or are going, what, Pitney Bowes? This is a 100-year-old company that has actually done a great job of transitioning with the changing times. And part of the reason for that is their focus on building a culture of innovation. And this product management council is a great example of that and will give us some great insights. So with Felicia, we talk about the power of cross-functional teams and how to make innovation more than just lip service. So here's the thing I want you to consider when listening. So we talk a lot about product managers, and I think her definition of that will be very interesting to you. It's not a job title. But everything that we talk about can be applied to anyone that is trying to be an innovator, that is trying to have that ripple effect out and move an idea forward. So grab your notepads. It's time to listen up. All right, Felicia, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm pleased to be here.
I'm looking forward to it. So let's just start with, let's give people some context, a little bit about kind of what you do in your areas of responsibility.
I lead a company-wide product management council initiative that helps our product managers build their skills, collaborate with each other, and generally just increase their ability to launch successful products.
I'm just taking notes here as you talk. I was like, ooh, I want to ask about that now. Actually, before we dig into that, because I have so many questions for you, I actually want to back up and start by talking a little bit about Pitney Bowes, the organization you work for. Because I think that especially those of us who are Gen Xers like me, we grew up with Pitney Bowes. But it's gone through a lot of transition in terms of how it serves the marketplace, I think, as the marketplace has changed. Will you talk a little bit more in depth about that, kind of where they were versus where they are now, so we can kind of wrap our heads around the innovation as a total from your perspective and the company perspective?
Right. Well, Pitney Bowes is a story of transformation. We're a 100-year-old company. And you don't really get to be a 100-year-old company if you don't know how to transform yourself. Yeah. So innovation is just part of our company DNA. It's just part of our culture. We started in the 20s. I mean, long before any of the employees that are there now were there. But they started in the 20s dealing with physical commerce, with mail. And then we have evolved so that now we combine physical commerce with digital technologies to transform and redefine global e-commerce. So the world of commerce has definitely changed in 100 years, and so have we.
So I'm curious with Pitney Bowes, because the story you tell is one of, sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, staying ahead of the marketplace and the change. And I'm curious if that's the case or if it came from more of a reactive place of, oh my God, the marketplace has changed and now we need to catch up. And, you know, the reason I'm asking is I think a lot of leaders out there in companies that are trying to be innovative are looking at the marketplace and thinking, oh my gosh, I'm already behind and now I need to catch up, which is very different than constantly keeping up with what's happening.
Well, I have only been with the company about a year. So in my experience, we have been on this digital transformation for longer than I have been there. So it has clearly been in the sights of the company for a number of years. In terms of the history, when you go back decades, you know, I don't actually have a lot of that history, but I assume there were periods in which, you know, they had to figure out how to catch up as well.
It's interesting to me, and my big belief is if we can leverage change, we can actually keep up with it, as opposed to wait and then, oh my gosh, I got to figure out something, I got to change, right? The marketplace has changed. But so it's always interesting to me how companies actually go through to make that. And to your point, are able to stick around for 100 years. I mean, we're seeing the life cycle of companies these days become much and much shorter. So I want to dig into the product management council. And you talked a little bit about the goals, about building skills and collaboration. For you and for the team, what does success look like with the council? What are you ultimately trying to have happen?
Well, we're ultimately trying to have our product managers have a greater business impact. So we would empower our product management team, build a best-in-class product management organization because we think better product management means better products, means better business impact for the company.
Will you define for me, and I think I get it because I've talked to a few people in this area now, but for our listeners on Launch Street, what a product manager actually is? I know it's a little bit new as a more sought after or accepted kind of frame or job description. So will you describe how you guys think of product managers?
Yeah, product managers lead a cross-functional team to create, develop, deliver, and launch products. So they don't do everything on their own. It's one of the most cross-functional disciplines really there is in business. I mean, you've got general management, that's very cross-functional, and then you've got product management, which is, in my view, equally as cross-functional. So they really are the point person to coordinate this cross-functional team with this mission of delivering and launching products that meet customer needs.
So I love the way you defined it. And given that, I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you don't have to have product manager or director or whatever in your title to lead a cross-functional team. I mean, if you're doing out there, so if you're doing that out there, this is really for you. This is what you're doing.
Oh, indeed. And product managers come from all different functions because they watch someone doing it. So not only do they not necessarily have it in their title, so it's very hard for companies to figure out how many product managers they have because you have a variety of different people with a variety of different titles doing it. But it attracts people from all those other functional areas, you know, like product marketing or sometimes development or user experience, all kinds of people. Even we have some folks coming in from sales angle that sees how exciting it is to kind of create that nugget of value to the client and be part of that creation and delivery of that value that want to become product managers. So it is a bunch of variety of folks that come from a variety of backgrounds, all motivated actually to deliver a lot of value to clients.
So how does innovation fit into the objectives of the council or your team?
Well, innovation is really kind of integral to everything in all functions at Pitney Bowes. When we describe our culture, we use four words: client, team, win, and innovate. So it is really fundamental to our culture, but in particular, it's foundational to what product managers do. Because they need to bring this cross-functional team together to bring new ways of solving customer problems to the marketplace, and that's inherently innovative.
Why is collaboration so important to innovation? You mentioned the collaboration in the beginning, as well as this, the fact that the product managers are bringing together cross-functional teams, all these different diverse perspectives, opinions, responsibilities. How does collaboration, and let me rephrase that, why is it so important to the process?
Well, a couple of things here. The best ideas almost never spring forth from a single person's head, right? So no matter what venue we're trying to come up with something good and new, you tend to get much better results if you collaborate with others because we all bring our own view and skills and background to the problem. Doubly true with product managers because they cannot bring a product to market on their own. They have to leverage this cross-functional team, this broad cross-functional team to get that done. And so collaboration is actually one of the key focus skills we help our product managers hone because it is foundational to what they do. Successful product launches, that's a team sport. It's not an individual contributor.
I love that you just said that. Launch readers out there listening, I would encourage you to just take a pause and remember that launching products is a team sport. You need everybody to not just get it to market, but I'd say also to keep it in market and have it continue to do well. You know, I'm curious about your perspective of collaboration because I think oftentimes collaboration and consensus are confused. And, you know, when I think of collaboration, I think of it as the right people at the table at the right time, talking about the right things. And it's so integral to what we're talking about here with not just product managers, but with bringing products to market and innovation. How do you see really good collaboration? What happens when it's working?
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that you know it when you see it, but it's really each person has the ball when it's in their venue. That's collaboration, which is we're all going to bring something to the table. We're all going to bring something to the party. We all need to do our piece to get this thing to launch successfully. So we don't necessarily need to agree on everything, but we need to know our piece and know how our piece fits in with your piece so that we can meet this goal.
How do you do that in a way that works? And I'm asking because, you know, so often, so I love alignment, right? Not necessarily consensus. You can't all agree, and frankly, disagreement is good. But sometimes that gets personal or hard for people. So how do you, as the, you know, leader of this team, encourage a culture where, you know, disagreement happens, it's about alignment, kind of the things that you were just talking about? I know I'm talking a little in circles, but I have three questions in my head about it at once. My head's collaborating with itself.
Fantastic. Well, there's, some of it is sort of structure or business systems. We do recommend, and our product managers tend to have a structure of a team meeting. So not only do they have these one-on-one meetings, but periodically, let's say once a meeting, you get that launch team together and you have a plan and you keep everybody focused on the plan. That helps vet any issues that are coming up. You ask, okay, do you need anything from your peers in this group? What are decisions you need to be made outside of your function? And part of it is also over time you build trust with that team. And you know, every person on that team knows they can't get the whole piece done themselves. And so the team kind of learns to work together over time. If it's a new team, it can take some time for that to happen. But after release, you find a way as a team to make it work. So it's both structure and kind of the trust element as well.
You know, trust is so important to innovation, I think, overall. And we forget that so often. We overlook that. We go right to all the creative fun stuff and we forget that, hey, we need to take a step back and figure out how we work as a team and how we can trust each other first.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, one of the things that you talked about, this was in a past interview on Everyday Innovator, another podcast that you were interviewed on. Actually, I was interviewed on, but I also like to listen to it. It's a great podcast. But you talked about the fact that product managers felt strongly about spending more time gathering, and I think analyzing customer insights, but weren't actually able to spend their time there. So I got two questions here, but my first one is, why are customer insights so important to product launches and management?
Well, my view of innovation, it's going to be pretty product focused just from where, you know, where I'm coming from. From a product innovation point of view, I view it as solving a customer challenge better than has been the other alternatives or better than it's been done before. And foundational, if you take that view of what are you doing as a product manager, you're solving customer problems in a better way. Foundational to that is deeply understanding the customer. What jobs are they trying to get done? What struggles do they have when they're doing that? And so customer insights is the foundation or the start of it all.
Do you think that, you know, being the person to lead that initiative, whether that's, you know, going out into the marketplace and doing ethnographies or, you know, walking the day in the life, however you get those insights, really helps the cross-functional team because then they're taking those insights back. It almost is a ripple effect, isn't it, from kind of the tighter team out?
Absolutely. And in fact, what you find is sometimes the team, and it's often not just the product manager, it's usually better if it's at least a team of two. The team that's doing the interviews, maybe the user experience team or the product manager or combination thereof, one of the sort of best practices is to make sure that the rest of the team gets that feedback. And even parts of the team you may not think, you know, some people may not think are interested, actually are deeply interested, because what motivates most people who work on a product is, why does the customer care? Mm. So even if you're talking to your development team, not just the development leader, but the development team, they will get more energized. They will get more plugged into the initiative. They will be happier with the work they're doing because they can connect the dots between, yes, I'm writing the code for this function, but what does it mean to the customer? And it really brings all of us who are product related more connected to the customer and brings us more happiness, I think, in our work.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. I mean, I think in past work that I've done, all too often, I've seen those customer insights stop with the team that did the research.
Right.
And it doesn't get moved forward. Do you have or have you seen in your team any best practices for helping share that information in a way that's really meaningful and deep versus sharing it as, for lack of a better way to say it, as data?
Yeah, I mean, some teams do post their interviews and so forth, but then you're relying on people finding time they probably don't have to go listen to the,
right.
the interviews and so forth. So what works better, and the teams that do this well, I think, they have periodic, usually quarterly, sometimes monthly meetings with the teams, and they just go over the key insights and the key results, and therefore it can be like a back and forth collaborative discussion as well. There are lots of ways to do it. The important thing is that you do it, that you do share that in a way that works for your team.
I like what you're saying there, though, for launch readers out there listening. Sharing those insights isn't a point-in-time exercise. It is something that's ongoing if you do a little bit at every meeting, which I have to imagine helps you integrate that knowledge as well as kind of really feel it versus that one-time PowerPoint presentation. I really like that flip on how you do it.
Yeah.
So what do you think, and since we're talking about insights, what do you think are some of the best ways to gather those insights so that you can get to more of those innovative ideas?
I think probably the best approach, or the thing that is often overlooked but very, very impactful, is to make sure you're having open-ended conversations with customers. And I'm not talking about sales calls, and I'm not talking about feature prioritization calls, but make time to have at least a few each quarter, an open-ended conversation. What's your job? What are you trying to get done? What's the context in which you get this done? I'm not really even talking about my product. I'm talking to the customer and what their problems are. If you have just even a handful of these, it will be eye-opening. And I think product managers should sort of hold themselves accountable and monitor how often they're doing. Set a goal and then monitor how often they're doing that. Because often as product managers, we can trick ourselves into thinking we're very customer focused when we're having those other kind of calls. I mean, we are having sales calls, and you do learn some things from sales calls, and you learn some things from feature prioritization. But if you really want to innovate, you want to understand the context. You want to deeply understand the problem and how your customer thinks about that problem. And that will open up new opportunities to improve your product and deliver more value.
Yeah, and I bet you have found this too. I found that, you know, going out once doesn't give you the full picture, and things change. So it is so important to stay out there connected with your customer beyond that one time, you know, we're going to launch this initiative exercise.
Yeah, precisely. So I would say, you know, plan to have a couple of these a quarter and just make it part of your everyday routine. You need to kind of chunk that time out and make it a priority. Put it as part of your annual plan and try your very best to stay with it. It gets overlooked because there's so many urgent things that yeah. steal the time of the product manager that you always think, well, I can do that next month. I can do that next quarter. And if that's a one-time slip or a two-time slip, that's okay. But you just need to make sure you are weaving that into your process so that you stay in touch and you're building your knowledge set and continuing to keep it full so that you have the information to stay innovative.
Yeah, and I would add to that for leaders out there, your responsibility in this is to give your people time and resources to make it happen. Because it's also one of those things, don't you find, with the budget line where people think of it kind of, sometimes it gets bucketed into the nice to have.
Right, especially if it's in-person meetings. So in-person yeah. meetings are very powerful because you get to see the customer environment. But even if you need to do these over the phone, if you're having the conversations and you're careful to keep them open-ended and you're not leading your customer, you can get a lot of insight from just having a conversation on the phone with your customer. So I agree. If you're able to travel, and that is definitely preferable, you can watch them use the product, you can inherently see what they're doing. But even if your budget gets cut and you need to conserve funds, find a way to talk with them.
So, you know, you had just mentioned getting out there and observing them. And in one of the articles that you wrote, I think were interviewed in, I read something to the effect of, you know, watching customer behavior is more impactful than asking for their opinions. You get different things out of them, and maybe the better way to say that. Will you talk us through a little bit about why those are different? Because I think sometimes, you know, it's easy to say, well, I talked to somebody, but there is something very different in seeing how they do something.
Well, precisely. When you talk with them, they often don't know exactly what they're doing. And because you're talking to them, let's say I say, tomorrow, I'd like to have a conversation with you next Thursday, and I want to talk to you about what you like and don't like about our product and so forth. You say, okay, next Thursday at noon is fine. When we talk, you may not have used the product for a couple of days,
right.
Certainly not for a couple of hours. So when I ask you, hey, did you find it easy to print this particular report? We, as humans, we just don't remember it that way. We remember what we're trying to do, but we don't necessarily remember exactly how we're trying to do it. So even when customers are trying their very best to help you and be supportive, we don't always recall things clearly. If you can watch them, then you've got the North Star. You've got the actual truth.
Well, how great to be able to do that and then maybe follow up with continually talking to them. You can't always see them in person.
The watching tells you the what they're doing and what they're struggling with. But you do have to follow up with conversation to get more information about the why. Why were you doing it that way? And, you know, the why is something that usually means you're going to have to talk to somebody.
You know, you'll appreciate the story given the kind of the vantage point that you have. You know, I spent many years behind the one-way glass mirror and doing ethnographies. You know, every time we do products, new product development, we do that. And one day I got asked to be on the other side of a research project and be actually one of the participants. And I was so excited because I always wanted to be on that side of the, you know, the coin and find out, like, what is it like to be there? And the study had something to do with washing dishes and asked me all these questions about how I wash dishes. And I was like, absolutely. It is important to me to conserve water. Absolutely. I don't want to go through all the hot water. Yes. I am highly efficient when I wash dishes. Then I went and they videotaped me doing it. And as I was doing it, I realized, oh my God, I don't care. I just want to get this done. Like, this is horrible. Like, my vision of myself, and I was being honest, I wasn't lying in my mind, you know, I thought I really was a very efficient, care about, you know, the hot water being, you know, going out and all this stuff. And then you got me in front of the dishes and I was like, whatever.
It's a perfect example. And, you know, it's like you say, it's not that you're trying to be deceitful. You're trying to be honest, but we don't observe ourselves in the same way that a camera would. You know, we don't see our own behavior we see it in a very biased light. This is like when you tell your doctor, hey, do you eat healthy? You remember the spinach salad you had
Tuesday,
but you conveniently forget the hamburger, the French fries, and the piece of chicken you had yesterday, fried chicken you had yesterday. So it's just the way our minds work. And so therefore, there's value to talking with customers, but there's very much value to seeing what they actually do.
Right. As you were talking, that memory of the dishwashing experience came back, and it was years ago now, but it made me laugh so hard about it. And you know, I thought going into it, because I know that this is true, that I would not be susceptible to it. But it is 100% true of all of us, which is why I think, to your point, watching their behavior as well as talking to them are both important pieces of the puzzle. I want to loop back really quickly to just focus on innovation for a second with the council and what you're trying to accomplish. I'd love to hear your experience on how do you take something like innovation, which sounds really good and a lot of leaders talk about, and actually put it into practice with your teams. If you have any case studies, best cases, just ways that you have found this is how we really bring it to life, I'd love to hear them.
Well, we do have, it's a different group within the company, but we do have a sort of a business system that product teams use as they launch. So we have what is commonly known as a gate process. So there are certain artifacts and meetings that you have as part of the launch process. So what we try to do is we focus on some focused skills and we bring in experts and we develop content to help them have workshops and build their skills in an area. But what we try to do then is to embed that into our process artifacts so that they remember to use them. So let's say, for instance, we're working on improving our business cases in a certain way. Well, we would have a workshop that teams could drill down on their particular business case and learn how to use the new tools. But then we would also try to reflect that in the process. Because if you just dive into a skill, no matter how enthusiastic you are, it's very easy to kind of drop it, right?
Yeah.
And so if you can coordinate that with part of the process and remind them, hey, this is how this skill fits in with where you should use it, then you tend to get much more traction.
So I'm curious, with an organization like yours and with the teams, and you know, we've talked several times now about them being cross-functional and the product manager really being at, you know, the hub of that cross-functional team. Would you think it's fair to say that organizations that take that approach to how they launch and manage products, or I would probably lump in services here too, are going to have a much better chance of success than those that don't? And it's a little bit of a loaded question, but if the answer is yes, then how come?
Well, I would say yes. Certainly that's our philosophy, is that having, you have to have a process and you have to have some flexibility in the process too, so that teams can apply that to their situation, because our different groups are different. So you have kind of a process that shows and uses and based on best practices. And then you let the teams morph that for their particular situation, but you start with a baseline of best practices. Why? In part, it's complicated. You've got a lot of things distracting you. And like anything else, if you follow a structured process, it reminds you what to do, and it keeps you all on board with that process. And it's not perfect. Nothing's ever perfect. But it is a lot better than making it up as you go. And if you happen to work for a larger company, it's even more important to have a process, because you probably have interrelationships between different product teams. And if all the product teams know generally how we're going to go about this, you simply have a better result.
I just want to take a pause, because you said it quickly, but I think it's so important for launch leaders out there trying to do exactly what Felicia here is saying, which is have a process that allows for flexibility, because that's often where innovation comes from. You know, Felicia, you said have a baseline for best practices. Baseline for best practices. I think oftentimes we think of best practice as how everybody else should then do things. And what I heard you just say is that's a foundation, and then there's flexibility for the team to build on that and make it their own. And I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, you know, our different teams are different in their approaches and their backgrounds. And so you don't want process to strangle the creativity.
Yeah.
But you do want process to help the teams make it through systematically. And so we do, you know, provide that flexibility. And people do see it. When you line up a bunch of best practices, people see it. Hey, this is going to help me. You want to put things in there that are going to help the team. And as soon as they try it, they usually find it's helpful. And if it's genuinely not helpful, then, you know, we don't want them to do that anyway. They need to find a way that works for them. But whatever that process is, they should have a process, a repeatable process, so that they have some consistency from release to release and from team to team. As team members come and team members go and they move to a different product, it's good to have roughly the same baseline of approach.
And I would, you know, venture to say that that mindset of, you know, process is there to, so that things don't fall through the cracks, so that there is a baseline, so that there's something repeatable, so that we can continue to scale the business. It's hard to do that if you don't have a repeatable process. However, that allows for that flexibility and doesn't strangle the teams in doing what's best in their situation is a mindset and a cultural thing that not all organizations hold.
Right, and that goes back to innovation being woven into what we want to do, and so I think that's why we take that perspective in our product process.
Yeah, that's a really great way to think about it, and you're absolutely right. I hadn't really kind of put the two together, but that is innovation in action, is how you think about process and best practices at your organization. So I think you just might have blown my mind a little bit with that connection, putting those together. So that was great. So. You know, is there anything else in terms of the product council and what's really working and why it's helped? Is there anything around that I didn't ask you that, you know, you think I should have?
Well, you know what? There are two pieces to the council. And when I did this at previous companies, I didn't quite see this. I didn't see the two pieces as clearly. One is the product management community of people broadly throughout the company, but we also have a product management leadership team meeting, and both pieces create incredible value. So the product management community, those are the folks that are building the skills and actually implementing the process and going through the process. But we also have periodic meetings with the PM leadership team, and there's great value to getting alignment at that level across all of the business units so that we're all speaking from the same sheet of music. And if we do need to have differences within the different business units, we have that open conversation. So anybody that's starting one of these initiatives, I would encourage them to look at both pieces. Yes, reach out to your broader community, and that is your primary audience, but also at the same time, have some kind of communication within and among the leaders of that group, so that all of your work that you're doing with the broad community is aligned at a leadership level as well.
That's interesting. So do you think doing that helps you, or helps the teams, I should say, overcome the challenge of the silos?
Yeah. So it's indeed, the goal at that leadership level is, let's understand what's holding our product managers back. What are the challenges they're facing? And then at a leadership level, we decide, how do we want to approach it? And having that discussion at that level, it does help us with the program, but it also helps when those product managers are in their organizations struggling with that. It's their PM leadership that can help them overcome that. So it's really that dual messaging, or that dual conversation, has been even more valuable than I thought at the outset.
Yeah, that's a really, thank you for sharing that. That's a really important piece of advice there, because you're absolutely right. Whether you are, three little teams or 1,000 teams, because you're a huge company, I think having that alignment at the leadership level also helps those of us who work underneath leadership, because we see the alignment and the strategy happening versus, 10 different leaders saying 10 different things. And not because anything malicious, but because everybody's doing their own thing.
Exactly.
All right, I can't even believe we're close to out of time. So where can people go to connect with you?
Best way to reach me is LinkedIn. You can search on Felicia Anderson and Pitney Bowes, and I'll pop up.
Excellent. And we'll put a link in the show notes too for that.
Fantastic.
All right. The one last question for you. What's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you? It could be hobby, passion, experience.
Well, this is a little thing, but it is something I enjoy watching people discover about me. It's something about me that's hidden in plain sight, yet it usually takes people a little while to figure it out. So I pronounce my name Felicia, but almost everyone pronounces it Felicia. And it really doesn't bother me either way. But the fun part is, when I introduce myself, I'm working with a new team. It usually takes about 6 months for people to hear me say my name, and then they'll come back to me and say, do you pronounce your name Felicia or Felicia? And I enjoy, it tells me something about them, it tells them something about me, and it's just, over the years, it's become sort of a fun observation as people discover this, and how they discover it, and how they react when they discover it. I thought you might like that, because I've heard on your podcast a number of guests say your name in a number of ways.
Yeah.
I thought this might be something that you could relate to.
And if you're listening out there and thinking, my God, Tamara got it right, that's amazing, it's because I asked. And we had a little bit of a conversation about our names ahead of time. I'm not magical. I got the insight. But now I feel like I would love to work with you so that I can start taking bets on how long it takes people to get your name. But, correct me if I'm wrong. You and I, we were talking a little bit about this offline, but it's no longer offensive. It's just funny because nobody gets it right.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I do not mind it in the least, because I recognize the rest of the world really does pronounce it Felicia. I'm the oddball to pronounce it Felicia. So that's perfectly fine. I don't even hear it most of the time, but I really do enjoy it when people discover it. And what was it that prompted them to discover it? And it's a fun little experiment, if you will.
I love it. And what's funny about that is, I guarantee you, some of the people listening, and you'll catch yourself doing it out there, you'll go, oh my gosh, you have to go listen to this podcast that Tamara, interviewed Felicia. I mean, Felicia. You'll catch yourself in the moment.
Exactly.
Well, Felicia, thank you so much for joining us. It was really insightful. And I would encourage those of you listening to think about your role in your teams and how you can bring some of what we talked about to a more innovative level with some of the insights here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a great time. Lots of fun.
Congratulations. By listening to this podcast, you took another step towards becoming an everyday innovator. To leap forward, visit www.gotolaunchstreet.com and take the Innovation Quotient Edge Assessment to discover your unique everyday innovator style, and access the Everyday Innovator Digital Magazine for the top tools, insights, and inspiration at your fingertips 24/7. Tamara will be back with another Everyday Innovator conversation soon. In the meantime, if you got a nugget of value out of this podcast, let Tamara know by leaving a 5-star review and comment. Your review equals more guests, more listens, bigger impact. Until next time.